It's time for Twig. This week in Google, Jeff Jarvis, Gina Trapani, and Danny Sullivan of Search Engine Land will discuss Mac cuts signals to SEOs, Google Glass best practices, a little bit of a fight coming up on that, and is Yahoo really the number one page on the web? We'll find out why next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 233, recorded January 22nd, 2014. Glass goes to the movies. This Week in Google is brought to you by Shutterstock.com, with over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code TWIG114. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TWIG to receive $10 off at checkout. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 270,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/twig to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Google, the show that talks about the latest in the Googleverse and the cloud and Facebook and Twitter and all that jazz. And Gina Trapani is here from her offices at ThinkUp, the launch under her belt, ready to face the brave new world of business. Hi, Gina.
Of actual users and customers who are demanding to know what we're giving them for their money. Yes. Hello.
Yeah, they got the credit card charge this week, so.
Yes.
Now they want to know.
That was the real test. Good to be here, as
always. Great to have you. Also with us from Davos, Switzerland. And with a little bit of a wonky connection, but we love him so much, we're just going to put up with it. Jeff Jarvis. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm in a world 7 seconds behind.
Sorry. Hey, where are you? Are you in some special Davos World Economic Forum mission control?
I'm in the media center.
Oh, it looks
filled
like.
With desks of empty now because they're all at parties.
Is Bono there?
He's here this year.
Ooh.
Oh. I'm supposed to see him for a dinner tomorrow night. Not an on-team dinner, but, a large dinner.
How fun.
Wow.
It's exciting. Hey, that other voice, Danny Sullivan's here from Search Engine Land and Marketing Engine Land. And always one of the most astute observers of the Googleverse. And it's always great to have you on, Danny. Thanks for joining us. Yeah. I'm just looking at my ThinkUp, Gina.
Ooh.
Takao Miki followed me. Do geekery, geek, business, and tech sound like good descriptions? Oh, yes. Oh,
yes, they do.
Oh, my. This week's key stats. This is nice. So as time's gone by, this has gotten deeper and deeper and more interesting.
Yes, that's the point. That is the point. Actually, I saw that 3 years ago you signed the lease.
I signed the lease for the Brick House.
Really cool.
Hard to believe.
Really cool to watch.
Yeah, we did it on the air. Yeah.
Yeah.
With my special pen. That's kind of neat.
Yeah, that was cool.
That's kind of neat. This also is, by the way, the anniversary, the 30th anniversary of the 1984 commercial, the Super Bowl in 1984.
Really?
Apple's 1984 commercial was aired on this day for the first time and the last time in most areas. I think they aired it in some other places just so they could win a Clio Award. The ad that announced the Macintosh to the world. And all you have to do is Google 1984 ad and you'll find plenty of copies of it. Should I play it, Chad? You think? Should we just... Here we are, and, I have to skip the ad. There's an ad on the ad. That seems a little much.
Ad recursion.
It's Inception. Everybody's seen this so many times. We were talking about Star Wars before the show began. And it's of that kind of cultural phenomenon. You know, it's funny. The soundtrack sounds exactly like the new iPad ad soundtrack with Robin Williams reading Walt Whitman poetry.
What's amazing is that they managed to capture 30 years ago what it looks like inside an Apple store today.
There's going to be a big event Saturday at the Flint Center where the Macintosh was unveiled on January 24th, 1984. January 25th, 2014. And a lot of the original Apple team will be there. It's going to be a big event at the Flint Center in Cupertino. And they're selling tickets online, Mac30th.com. So there you go. A little bit of history. Tell us about Davos. What are you doing there? What is the World Economic Forum, Jeff?
I was just trying to switch headsets to see if I could get rid of the lag. The World Economic Forum is 1,500 machers from all fields, business, government, NGOs, journalism, who come together every year. And stuff happens here. It really does. So tomorrow I got to go to a session listening to Japanese Prime Minister Abe. I wish it were fascinating and exciting. If I cared more about Japan versus China, I might have been fascinated, but it was a hot room and I was sleepy. Tomorrow we get to see the president of Iran and Mexico. The next day, the president of Brazil, and our little media group. So it's fun.
What is the idea?
See all kinds of people I don't see the year around and talk to people. So I'm going to, a session this morning on Big Brother with Senator Leahy, wow, 10 feet away from me, able to talk about that. So it's kind of ridiculous. It's kind of a hoot. But if they ask you to come, you don't say no.
Who does this and why?
Who comes to Davos and why?
No, who is the World Economic Forum? I mean, is this a government that throws this event?
No, it's a guy named Klaus Schwab, Professor Klaus Schwab, who's German and now Swiss. And he put together this organization 30-some years ago. And it's really quite phenomenal because he brings together all these world leaders. Companies pay upwards of $500,000 a year for the privilege to come, plus plenty of other fees.
Wow.
They can make a fortune on this stuff, but it's a not-for-profit. And it does bring together world leaders, and major things have happened here. And so it's a pretty amazing thing.
It's neat. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's also 1%-ish, but... so is most of the world. There was a study out this week that said that there are 83 people whose wealth equals half the world. I think a few of them may be here.
That is depressing, isn't it? Those inequality statistics. So Matt Cutts, a couple of days ago, blogged at mattcutts.com. Okay, I'm calling it. If you're using guest blogging as a way to gain links in 2014, you should probably stop. Because over time, it's more and more of a spammy practice. And if you're doing a lot of guest blogging, you're hanging out with really bad company. Danny, he kind of backed down a little bit, saying, oh, that doesn't mean don't do it.
His original post said, it's like the decline and fall of guest blogging. And that was the headline.
Right.
And when you read the article, he said, look, if you're doing guest blogs to try to build links and all this sort of stuff, you should stop it. It's just really spammy. It's not really a helpful thing. And that's sort of his warning shot that, if Google were to take a close look at somebody's website and think that you're just running a lot of blog posts that have no real purpose other than to try to help somebody else rank better, then, you might be deemed as spamming. But what happened was you had a lot of people who have guest contributors and guest blog posts that are written not because they're trying to help someone rank better in Google or that the person's trying to rank better than Google, but they just, they're contributors.
It's an established practice. Om Malik does it on GigaOm. Does it. It's an established practice. Not everybody who posts on a blog works for that blog. So
the issue really was that in this case, Matt is probably too close to it when he thinks of guest posts and guest blogging, in his mind. And I think of people in the SEO space, you tend to think that crummy guest blogging stuff, right? Where you get these requests from people like, hi, comma, I've been visiting your site that I love. I would like to give you content. Here is my content. All I ask is for 3 do follow links back and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
So he had to walk it back and say, look, I'm not saying don't do guest blog posts. I'm saying don't do guest blog posts for SEO purposes where, you think that – because you can just get this post running in a bunch of different places, and you manage to get a nice link in there that says best used cars, you know, somewhere hidden in the text or whatever, that's going to rank you well, that's one of the things that they're going to be going after. But it did. It caused the most notable example, I thought, was Charles Stross, who's like, you know, this award-winning science fiction author, is out on Hacker News going, but I have, you know, Hollywood directors and everybody about to do guest blog posts, and now I'm kind of worried, how's Google going to automatically figure this stuff out? So it caused some panic. And importantly, there is no automatic method on how this works anyway. It's really kind of like how Google deals with advertorials. It can't look at a web page and think, you know, that's an advertorial where someone has paid to have an article placed and they have a link in it, therefore that violates our guidelines, we're going to, you know, knock it down. What happens is they go into a website because something suspicious has been raised. It's almost like going through customs or whatever. And they're like, right, you come over here, we're going to flip through your bag now and see what you got. And then they go through and they say, right, well, I'm seeing all these sorts of things. That's not kosher with us. Now you're getting a penalty. So really, if you've been doing blog posts because you have guests and you think that it's really good content, there's nothing for you to panic about. But if you've been running blog posts because people out of the blue have been coming to you saying, hey, I've got some great content, why don't you run it for me? This will be a great thing for both of us, and we'll rank better on search engines. Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, we get that email all the time. I'm sure you do, too, at search engines.
I get that lots.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that all the time, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even really actively blogging anymore. It's weird.
It strikes me that it's a little bit like porn. You know, the famous comment by Justice, I can't remember his name, that I don't know what porn is, but I know it when I see it. Of course, we all know spammy blog posts, but I don't know how – it might be difficult to algorithmically find.
Well, but, Leo, that's what Matt's saying, is that at some point he's going to have to trust quality bloggers that are really put in there for a good reason. And it's more of a human thing. He's saying to the bloggers,
it's got
to
be human.
Decide.
A computer can't
because
do
if,
it.
If you do it all the time, if you have nothing but guest blogs – this goes back to this idea that I've mentioned a lot of times, and it came up today here at Davos, actually, is that I still think that Google has to have appeal practices, and I also think a jury of peers. If there were a jury of bloggers who helped Google and said, yeah, that's spam, that's okay, listen to us, Google, it takes the heat off Google for having the power of God.
Well, but isn't this exactly what Google doesn't want to do? They want to, if they could, they'd do everything algorithmically, because the last thing they want to be is, look, first of all, my first reaction to this is, wow, Google wields a lot of power. And that power could be wielded unfairly and perhaps is wielded from time to time.
Just ask Expedia, which has, I think, a 6% drop in its stock because it was penalized by Google yesterday.
25% of their search visibility has disappeared, mm-hmm. according to Barry Schwartz writing in your search engine land.
So, yeah, Google
this
does
is, this is
have
where
a lot
Google,
of power.
Google is vulnerable for antitrust here. And they've got to be careful, and they've got to come up with better procedures, and they've got to come up with more transparency about this. It was brought up today here at Davos. The head of Bain brought up the RapGenius case and made it very clear that RapGenius messed up, admitted they messed up, came back. But it's this idea that Google has the power of God in these instances.
Did Expedia break any rules? I mean, this is a severe penalty.
Well, we don't know for certain. We don't know for certain. We know that Expedia in December had been spotted and outed by a post that was saying, look, they look like they have all these unnatural links and they're in weird places like the footers of WordPress blogs and stuff like that. And then nothing happened, and then they took this hit. Expedia saying nothing on the record, Google saying nothing on the record, but it has all the look and feel like, yeah, Google saw something that Expedia was doing and decided to hit them with it. I mean, when Google rarely actually goes through and confirms if they penalize somebody. So when you want to know if someone's in Google jail, you search for them, and if you can't find them in ways that you'd expect to them, then you kind of have a pretty good idea that they were. But in terms of the antitrust thing, you know, it's hard. First of all, Google has First Amendment protections in the United States to do whatever the heck it wants pretty much with its search results. That's already been tested. I mean, it's been tested years ago. So if the New York Times decides that it does not want to run an article about some company that it thinks has been doing bad PR to drum up stuff, nobody says, well, you're so powerful, New York Times, and it is powerful, we're going to, you know, control you or whatever. And also, RapGenius doesn't compete with Google. right? So it sucks if you're Rap Genius that you can't go there, but it's hard to make a case that Google, on an antitrust purpose, decided, and we kept Rap Genius down. But the whole reason that Google is in antitrust issues right now in Europe actually came out of the exact same thing, where there was a shopping search engine that Google felt like was doing some spammy stuff, penalized them because it felt like it was protecting its search quality. And then the shopping search engine, this was Foundum, decided that, no, this was Google trying to prevent competition.
Because they're in the same business.
Right.
Although, as they are with ITA, in the same business as Expedia.
Sure. And in fact, Expedia, I think, is part of the same group that kind of glommed on to this whole big antitrust thing and Google's got to be stopped or whatever. Now, the interesting thing, though, is Google's already cleared of all that stuff in the U.S. The FTC has said, no, you're fine. We're still waiting to see what happens in the EU. But it is a weird case where, you know, somebody – it's a weird fight back against spam to then seize the antitrust aspect. There's relatively few companies that can use that to say Google went after me on, you know, to, because they're trying to be a monopoly. Most companies that are hit are either hit because there's a good reason that they should be hit, or they get hit and they just, you know, are upset because they don't think Google's being fair, but they don't tend to think, and Google's not being fair from an antitrust perspective.
But this is how Google muddies the waters with their acquisitions, because it's tough if you want to be a search engine and you're in the same business as somebody that you're posting links to. It seems like they have real antitrust, maybe not, but conflict of interest for sure.
Yes, yeah. The more that Google is doing stuff, I did this thing about a year ago. I talked about how Google changed from a search engine to destination. The more Google has its own destination content or its own stake in where it can send you to, the more that it gets susceptible to these accusations that, oh, it's trying to be abusive or whatever. So, you know, and it's tough because there are some cases where you're looking at these types of things and you're like, well, this is cruddy. My perspective is the bigger issue isn't, well, Google's wielding all this power or whatever. The bigger issue is that most of these things happen because Google is desperately, desperately trying to protect the sanctity of the link as a way that they count votes to figure out what pages should rank better. And I always go back to trying to liken it as if, you know, Google is stuck on this fossil fuel. The links are like this fossil fuel that are really heavily polluted at this point, that people buy them, sell them, barter them, trade them. They don't give them when they should. They do give them for reasons that they shouldn't do or whatever. And Google keeps coming up with all these reasons why you should be able to use a link in this case, but not that. Like, well, press release links, we're not going to count anymore. Well, guest blog posts, we won't count. We will count them, but only if it's like a real guest post thing. Or no, you don't want to have your links being an infographic, because now those infographics, we don't know that everybody's vouching for that. And it's like a laundry list of things, to the degree that it's like, I don't really know what's left that they're supposed to count.
You're right in everything you just said. But here's one yes but. The yes but is that Google is trying to be transparent and let people know, without giving the algorithm off, let people know what works and what doesn't. And I think we got to give them some points for that. I know I get to be Mr. Pro Google here. But I think that's a factor in where Matt Cutts, as an open part of Google, is trying to explain to people the rationale behind what he does to make that algorithm. And that's not – it may be confusing, because his job is, the world is, but is that really an awful thing?
Gina?
I love Danny's rant, by the way. And actually, Danny, what I want to hear from you is what you think. If links from web pages aren't a good indicator of quality anymore, right? So what's the new page rank? Is social the new page rank? Are we basically going full circle back to Yahoo, when Yahoo used to have editors, you know, compile search results, you know, to good websites? Yeah. Like if Leo Google Plus is a link and he's legit, does that mean that link, you know, should get high page rank? Like what else can Google do?
I think social should be a much bigger part of the equation than it is now. And again, about 2 years ago now, I think I did an article and it was like, when everyone gets the vote, social share isn't the new signal or something like that. And what I was trying to explain was, when Google started, I used the idea of links as votes, and that's the democracy of the web. And another metaphor I use, that it's like saying, well, if links are votes and that's democracy of the web, then that's democracy in the United States, when you had to be like 35 and white and a landowner and a man in order to vote. That's right. Not democracy. Only a small number of people voted. And if you think how many times you have liked a page or a content or a business or whatever, you've been really happy about something, had a great experience, that you've then turned around and said, you know, I'm going to write a blog post about this company that I had a great experience with. I'm going to make sure I link to them because I want to make sure Google understands that they're valuable. I'm going to make sure that the anchor text of that link is very descriptive so that hopefully they'll rank well for, you know, you know, custom surfboards because that's really good. And I'm going to make sure I do it on a platform that doesn't automatically somehow put a no follow in there. People don't do that. But when people are happy with a business or they want to recommend something, they actually like it on Facebook or they tweet it on Twitter or they go to Google Plus. So to me, social signals are far more democratic than the link signal. And when I keep bringing this up, but when I bring this up with Google and with Bing as well, the response comes back is, we don't find them that useful. We don't feel like they're that valuable. They could be gamed. And there's like a litany of excuses they have as to why they can't use social. And I come back to thinking, well, I'm sorry that you're finding that social doesn't seem to work because you've spent all of maybe 2 years kind of poking at it. That's like saying solar doesn't work very well because we put all this energy into building a gasoline engine and we don't want to leave that aside as well. Yeah, social is not going to be perfect at all. You know, there's going to be issues with it, but I just find it hard to believe that links are somehow so much more better. And today I'll leave off with this. You know, Matt Cutts just did a post today where he's being asked about, it's a video, you know, does Google use Twitter and Facebook to rank things? And he's going through and he's at pain saying, no, we don't use Twitter data, social data, Facebook data. Those are just ordinary pages. We don't count up the followers and all this sort of stuff. And if you really understand some of the back history, one of the things you're hearing in there that Google especially has a problem with is he will make mention about how they were blocked. He doesn't name it, but he's talking about Twitter from getting Twitter data. And one of the issues that I think Google has is that back when they had a deal with Twitter, they built a lot of their infrastructure around Twitter's data to an unprecedented degree. The deal fell apart, and then Google had to stop having things like real-time search. And I think they looked at that and they said, never again. Never again will we be so dependent on a third party for data that we use in our search results, which is why they don't want to use it. And that's why you also have, by the way, Google Plus.
Okay. Right. But Danny, there's another thing going on here, which is that, you know, things like Upworthy, which may have good motive behind them, are cynical acts to get you to click on things. BuzzFeed. Chartbeat said recently they found out that people share before they read. That the notion that you shared something, you linked to it, is not necessarily a signal at all.
I just like the picture in the headline, and I'm going to share that on my Facebook.
And I'm going to be before everybody else.
Yeah.
Upworthy
comes in and cynically says, she turned the page, and it changed her life, and you don't believe how it'll change yours. And I hate this stuff, how it tells me what I'm going to think, no matter how good the motive is. So what they're doing there is they're manipulating, instead of the algorithm, they're manipulating us to manipulate the algorithm. And so once again, I got to be a little sympathetic to Cutsville for saying, how do you cut through that?
I agree with you. That's true. That's why you don't just rely on one signal so heavily. But it's like saying I could do that qualification with links and more. And then there's this whole extreme number of things they do to try to still get value out of link signal. It's like they're digging up the tar sands of links now, and they're extracting whatever left that they can get out of it after they filter it through all this stuff. And so, no, the social signal isn't pure, but you also can take that and align it with other things. So you can take a social signal, and you can also then go through and look at things like we have other data that tells us how much time people spend on a website. Okay. Oh, and this video is actually on YouTube. Maybe we can tell how long that's played, or maybe we can tell the kind of clicks that are happening, or there may be data that they have in aggregate that they associate with it. And that's what the algorithm is all about. You take all these signals together and try to help them kind of check and balance each other to figure out what works and what doesn't work. It's just that the link signal has become much more degraded over time. That's why you get posts from Matt.
I agree.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, when you think about it, Google Analytics is on sites across the web. So Google has all that data. Google has the knowledge graph, right? So we know that Mark Hamill is 62 years old, and Google knows that, right? So they can look at a web page that says he's 40 and know that that's incorrect. Like, Google can know a lot about the quality of a website based on lots of different signals beyond just links. And yet SEO is this game that's still going being played, not a game, but it's content publishers kind of, you know, work the SEO angle like it's their job, because so many publishers or content creators depend upon Google traffic to make their money, right? Because to drive eyeballs to their ads, right? I think to what you said earlier, Jeff, I do give Google credit for having Matt Cutts in front of a video camera explaining, you know, how they view certain things. Of course, Matt is very close to the guest blogging situation. You know, of course, people shouldn't stop guest blogging. If there's a blog that has an audience that you want to reach, of course you would do it. Forget the SEO. Right. I mean, that's why he had to dial it back and say, I mean, for SEO purposes. But that's just, you know, that's just a natural that you'd want to do that. So I do give them credit for sharing how they view these kind of practices. But I think that Danny's absolutely right that the PageRank is the link value should be small and mixed in with a bunch of other signals, social, other data, knowledge graph data, et cetera.
Do you think Larry Page has an emotional tie to PageRank?
Because it's his name, you mean?
Well, everything.
I don't get the impression Larry Page is paying much attention to search these days.
It's not the most important business at Google, is it?
He seems to be off of things. And PageRank, by the way, it itself is one aspect of it. In particular, it was, we will count links and give each link a score. You know, and they're far more sophisticated to sort of stuff. So I don't think he'd be like, oh, you know, I need to have PageRank 4.0 out there. I'm not going to let it go with it, whatever. But I do get depressed more and more each day, because as, you know, Google is buying and companies that put thermostats here, and I'm going to get smart contact lenses and all this stuff, I keep joking. And all that's paid by mesothelioma and payday loan ads, right? Because the underpinnings to all these great things that Google is doing, you know, the bulk of their income still comes from search and still comes from those search ads that are out there, a lot of which are, you know, not from very savory type of things. And sometimes I feel like Google just kind of wants to pretend like, well, you know, all that stuff, it's not got nothing to do with us. You know, we're Google Glass and we're great and we're wonderful. And for someone who has to deal with the search space day to day, it is a tough job. I would not want to run a search engine. And yet you see terrible results. You see things that don't make sense. I watched last week, I wrote a story that we had thousands of hotel listings got hijacked in Google Local. And Google's response to that was, we're aware of it.
What do you mean they got hijacked?
They got people like Hilton and Sheraton. They have Google Local Plus listings, verified listings, which means that those listings you had to have used a PIN number that was sent to your address at the location.
Yeah, it's like a postcard.
Number.
Yeah.
So they these were all verified listings. A lot of them were verified. And what happened was the official URLs for those things that would have led you to the Hilton or the Sheraton or the Holiday Inn or whatever got changed to some third-party web booking site. Thousands of listings, right?
How did that happen?
Yeah, how did it happen?
Well, that would be a good thing to know, wouldn't it? And I would think that Google would like to explain it so that we would not have it happen again. But Google's response initially was nothing at all. Then they kind of came back after the article ran and said, we're aware of it and we're correcting it. We don't know how it happened, but what I do know is if you had thousands of Google Plus accounts that got hijacked and got treated that way, it would have been a user privacy nightmare, and Google wouldn't have been able to crawl back into their no comment type of reaction, and we don't need have to deal with it or whatever. And the security for those businesses is just as important. But when it gets into these unsavory things, more and more I feel like Google just is like, well, we won't say anything, we'll pretend it goes away. And that's the kind of transparency to me that counts, that when something goes wrong, you actually step up and explain it clearly so it doesn't happen again.
It's only going to get worse, because the waters are more and more muddied. You probably saw the article in Ars Technica this week. We talked about it on Windows Weekly about Machinima paying $3 per 1,000 impressions to its YouTube video producers to include positive content about Xbox One, money that apparently was given to the Machinima from Microsoft, although the question about is whether Microsoft knew anything about it, and they say they did not. Machinima specifically told these YouTube video makers that it had to be positive content about Xbox One. They couldn't say anything negative about Machinima, and they couldn't say it was a sponsored mention, which is, of course, a violation of FTC guidelines.
Which I would get really upset about if it weren't for the fact that every time I watch Modern Family, apparently everybody just uses Windows Phone.
It's going to be
everywhere.
You cannot get away from it anymore.
It is everywhere. And at this point, I have had it with, let's get worried about it when it happens online, where the FTC have to give you guidelines to say, oh, that was a sponsored tweet. You better mention it's a sponsored tweet. And yet I can watch a half an hour show with so much product placement in it. And the idea of disclosure was at the very end of the credits, which have been shoved up into little things so they can do promos and everything
promotional
else. There's a little
promotional
thing telling me that promotional.
Yeah.
You know what? Modern Family is going to Australia this week. Or I love Modern Family, by the way. But they're going to Australia on some big thing or whatever. They're not going to Australia because, hey, we just thought it was a good idea for everybody to go off to Australia.
The Australian Tourism Board is bringing them down there.
Shopping, you know.
Yeah.
Danny, you are on a rant spectacular tonight.
I know.
Sorry, you are wound up like a marching doll.
Can we talk about Gina's Think Up, which
I love it.
Awesome?
All right, let's do that in a second. We're going to take a break, talk about something nice.
I love it, Danny.
Just Think Up, and we're going to talk about the change log and a lot more. You're watching This Week in Google with Gina Trapani, Danny Sullivan from Search Engine Land. He's always been, you know, you've always been the guy who is keeping Google honest, and I'm just thrilled that you're here, as always. And, of course, from Davos, Switzerland, and the World Economic Forum, Macher, Jeff Jarvis. Macher. I like that word. Our show today brought to you by Shutterstock.com. If you do, publications, if you do PowerPoint presentations, if you're doing advertising, if you're doing any project that you need royalty-free images for, you've got to check out Shutterstock.com. It is our royalty-free clip art. I don't want to use the word clip art. It's so much more than clip art. It's our royalty-free photo site of choice. We have the 25-image-a-day subscription. Find it very useful, partly because the amount of stuff on Shutterstock is so incredibly huge. Almost 33 million royalty-free stock images, illustrations, vectors, and videos. But then, you know, that would be nothing if you didn't have a good search tool. And they have probably one of the best. You can not only search for objects, for nouns, like bulldozer, but you can modify it with adjectives. You can put, I wonder if there's a lonely bulldozer in picture anywhere in here. Yes, there's a lonely bulldozer. Here's a lonely bulldozer looking out at the vista. That is a great search engine. So when I say 32 million images, people might go, well, how are you going to find what you want? You can. Absolutely. Not only that, they add 20,000 plus images every single day. So every time you visit, you're going to find something new. The images are, for the most part, from professional photographers and artists. Of course, they're all curated individually for content and quality. They're just fabulous. Just fabulous. I want you to visit Shutterstock.com. Try the search engine. Sign up for a free account. That's a good idea because then you can create a Lightbox where you can save images to your Lightbox, access them anytime, share them with other team members. It's a great way to get inspiration. They have a wonderful iPad app, a Webby Award-winning iPad app, which lets you search on the go and find inspiration on the go as well. Shutterstock.com. Truly international, as is Twit. If you go to Shutterstock.com and you buy something, they have multilingual customer support in more than a dozen countries, full-time customer support throughout the week. They speak your language. No credit card needed to set up an account. But if you do decide you want to buy, I invite you to use our offer code TWIG114, and you'll get 25% off any package. Shutterstock.com. Try it for free, but TWIG114 if you want to save 25%. Percent off. Don't forget to when you go there. You're normally on the photos page, but then there's the footage page, which has a whole bunch of stuff, clips and stuff, things you can save for free. See, that would be useful right there for a PowerPoint. A battery filling up in my dreams that fast. Shutterstock.com. Now play the drums, blow the horns. It's time for the change log.
The Google Changelog.
What do you think this is, a morning show? Here she is, Gina Trapani, with the latest from Google.
I've been waiting for this. We have talked about this. We talked about this coming up, but now it's finally happening. We're seeing Google Now integrated into Chrome on the desktop. All right, before you get too excited, these are the Chrome Canary builds. So these are the really, really early builds, and it's for Windows and Mac. It's Canary build 34.0.1788, you know, Google and their crazy version numbers. So you have to install the Chrome Canary build, and then you got to go into Chrome, flags, enable Google Now, change it to enable, restart, sign in, stand on your head, and then when it's all done, you'll see a little card that says, Google Now on your desktop, stay connected to what you need to know across all devices. This is basically the Google Now that you get on your Android phone, but you see weather scores, traffic, and reminder cards.
Where does
in
it
Google
show
Now.
Up though? I mean, how does it show up? Is it?
It shows up. It looks like a browser notification window, basically.
Okay, so yeah, it's in the menu bar on a Mac, anyway. Yeah.
Yes,
oh, that's
exactly.
Interesting. Okay.
Exactly. Huh. Exactly. Huh. So I want this upgraded to a stable build ASAP because I love.
You don't
Google
use
Now.
Canary.
I just installed it today because I wanted to try this out. I don't use Canary. I usually on beta, so I don't know. Maybe I'm just not cutting edge a lot.
I did Canary enough. For a while. I didn't see any more problems with it or anything like that. I'm using beta right now, but I gotta think it's almost here if it's in Canary.
Yeah, it's a good sign. I use PushBullet, which is this extension that pushes notifications from your Android phone to your desktop. So I often do see Google Now cards, but that's kind of a hacky roundabout way to do it. I love that this is built in. And you know, the warnings around Canary is like it can break at any time. And even when you enable Google Now, it's in the experiment section, and there's this giant disclaimer across the top that says like, hey, any of these could break at any time. Your privacy could be compromised. You know, we take no responsibility. I mean, they really kind of disclaim the whole thing. So, I think I'm going to stick with beta. But this actually did get me to install Canary because I wanted to check it out. Google Alerts, google.com/alerts, which I haven't looked at in a long time, but I did. I went back to it today because I wanted to put in an alert for ThinkUp. Got a redesign. So it looks like Google's paying a little more attention to one of these sort of lesser known but super useful features. The Google Alerts emails, basically you put in a keyword, you say send me email with new news stories with this keyword in them. And the email got a redesign. It brings it closer to Google's latest look and feel. There's the card style layout that you'll see in Google search results or Google Now and Google's mobile apps. And the new alerts will tell you what kind of alert you're getting, hourly or daily or weekly. And they have larger headlines and social sharing buttons, including Twitter and Facebook. So if you haven't checked out Google Alerts in a while, if there's a story or a keyword you want to keep on top of, even if it's your own name or your company's name, I'll admit that I have total ego searches set up there. Check it out. And finally, Google's research division put together a really neat visualization of music that's been uploaded to Google Play Music. So if you go to research.google.com/bigpicture/music, you'll see the Google Play Music timeline. And it shows kind of, I'm actually not sure what it shows, but it's sure pretty. And
popularity of genres over time, I guess, right? I love that.
Over time, yes. If you mouse over the different genres, you can see the most popular albums. So this is based on play music data, or rather songs that Play Music users have uploaded to Play Music based on the album release date and genre. And it's just a beautiful visualization and a really neat sort of discovery mechanism, really, for music lovers. Over time,
neat.
From 1950,
so cool.
Through 2010, yeah.
I love graphs.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
Even if I'm like, I don't know what this means, I still want to click on it.
I don't know what it means, but I like it.
Exactly.
I like it.
Yep, and that's all I got.
There's your change log. Thank you, Gina.
Sure.
You know what I mostly got out of this is PushBullet.
PushBullet's great.
That's cool.
Have I not talked about PushBullet? I love PushBullet.
You talked about it on All About Android, right?
Yeah, All About Android, yeah.
Put an app on your phone, and then you have to have a Chrome extension on Chrome.
Yep. And then any notifications that go to your phone show up on your desktop.
That's so cool.
So if you get a text, Google Now card, and you know, Google Now, for a while it drove me crazy because I use Hangouts. And so when someone chatted me on Hangouts, I would get the notification on Hangouts on my desktop, and then I would get the push bullet notification. But you you can disable by app, so you can say, "Hey, don't mirror my notifications here." But it's really nice when the phone's ringing, you can see who's calling right on the desktop, any app fires a notification, you can see it without having to pick up your phone.
Push bullet, push to, so I put it on my. This is neat, and I could push stuff to the phone too.
You can push stuff to the phone. You can push stuff to your friends. It's really cool independent app.
Love it. And it's free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow. Thank you, Gina. Very nice. Push bullet. I just installed it.
Nice.
You got to listen carefully to every inch of this change log. There's all sorts of stuff in there. You never
know. Some Easter eggs I like to throw in there.
By the way, I was looking at Google Now to see, because somebody said, I only get sports, but I get lots of good stuff. I get birthdays on my Google Now. I get my calendar updates, my stocks, and oh, look, in Petaluma, it's 72 degrees right now. That's mean of me. That's just mean.
That is just wrong. Just mean.
Did you get 14 inches and 18 degrees in New York?
Yeah.
Did you get 14 inches last night? That's what I heard.
Yep. It took me 4 hours to get from JFK to Manhattan yesterday. Yeah, it was one of those
days. Were you walking?
No, slower. I was on a bus.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you fly in?
No Ubers. Even Uber couldn't save me yesterday.
Wow.
Yes.
What's it like in Davos? I'm sure it's cold and snowy, but do you expect
No. Today it was last I knew it was 50 degrees.
Okay. We're all screwed up. And Danny, you're in San Diego. Yeah. Where are you?
I'm in Orange County, Newport Beach,
where it's beautiful and warm.
So I don't know what my temperature is. It's probably not. Actually, you're a bit warmer, I think, in Petaluma than New York, because we got some coastal fog.
I can't believe it's 72 degrees. That's crazy.
I've been feeling a little bad, but and the weekend, it's just
jeez,
not super bad.
This weather report brought to you by Google Now.
I dread looking at Now in the morning, actually, when I have to decide whether or not I put thermal underwear on. Okay.
That's chose it, young lady. You wanted.
I know.
Although I was just interviewing, so I can't remember, maybe it was Larry Downs for Triangulation. But there's the general consensus that Brooklyn is a hotbed of innovation right now.
Oh, it is.
It's the time, the place to be.
I think it is.
Yeah.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what he was saying. He also.
How often do you come into Manhattan, Gina?
Oh, I'm in the office every day now. Mm-hmm.
You are okay.
Mm-hmm. So you're based out in Manhattan now?
Well, my ThinkUp's office is in Manhattan, but I'm living in Brooklyn. I'm actually still waiting to close on my new place, so I've been kind of Airbnb crashing at my mom's house. Long story. I will not regale you with
the details. It's harder to get a loan than ever, thanks to those bankers down there on Wall Street.
Yeah,
you have to practically give them blood. Type stuff.
Oh, tell me about it. Tell me about it. I blame the bankers and the lawyers.
It's crazy now.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. We're close, though. We're close.
Speaking of crazy, a man and his wife in Columbus, Ohio, subjected to hour-long interrogation by the FBI because employees at the AMC movie theater saw him wearing Google Glass.
And I didn't believe this story at first, but it's been confirmed since. It's just ridiculous.
This poor guy. Yeah. He's been in this theater before. This is Columbus, Ohio. He's been in this theater before. He's an hour into watching the movie with his wife or his partner. He's got glass on. These guys come and grab him and grab glass off of his face and take him into an interrogation room. I'm laughing. It's not funny, but I just can't imagine getting
he blogs. He blogs on the Gadgeteer. It was quite embarrassing. Outside of the theater, there were 5 to 10 cops and mall cops. It was like major bust. First of all, of course, because it's glass, he could have been recording the movie, right?
Sure.
Yes, he could have been.
So,
or he could have been recording it on his phone.
Right. I mean, but people do that, and you will get. I mean, that is a crime. But
who's going to buy that world's worst video? That's what's so absurd about
this. Oh, but they do. I mean, they do. There's camcorders. People are getting up and down. The net sound is terrible, but people do it and people sell it. But is this really a commensurate response? Somebody whose horrors taping a movie, even if he was taping the movie, it takes 5 to 10 police officers to take this man down? searched?
Yeah, I guess this theater had had trouble with bootlegging, with people recording movies in the past. So I guess when they were interrogating him, they were saying like, "Hey man, just give up your bot. Like, who are you working for? Just give up the guy up the chain, and we'll let you go." And he was saying, "Hey, just plug in my glass to a computer, and you'll see like there's pictures of my wife and my dog on there. I didn't record the movie, and it was an hour or like quite a bit of time passed before they actually looked at glass and tried to see whether or not ascertain whether or not he was actually recording."
He writes, "I insisted they connect to the glass and see that there was nothing on it. I also insisted they look at my phone and clear things out. But they wanted to talk first. They wanted to know who I am, where I live, where I work, how much I'm making, how many computers I have at home, why I'm recording the movie, who I'm going to give the recording to. Why don't I just give the guy up the chain, because they're not interested in me," over and over. You know, there is something really wrong when federal law enforcement officials are doing the bidding of the Motion Picture Association of America like this. When there's real crimes going on, this is ridiculous.
You know, if you're going to question him, what was, I think, there's so much I found disturbing about it. Like, you're going to be ripped out of your seat, okay, but that you're going to be questioned, you know, without being written your rights, but you're not actually under arrest, but you're clearly being detained. Technically, he should have been able to walk out at any time he wanted to.
They said that. They said, you're not under arrest, but if you choose not to cooperate, bad things may happen.
Right, and really, at that point, you can say, well, then bring on the bad things because I'm leaving unless you want to arrest me or whatever. But what? So there are all these things, but what was disturbing to me was that there's no technical expertise. If you're going to go after somebody, and these people, some of them went in there, seem to have some knowledge of the, you know, the bootlegging, how it's going on or whatever, and you see that someone has these Google Glass, you think you would at least Google a little bit of information about them,
or at least
in short order you'd understand things like, well, you're going to get maybe 45 minutes of the movie recorded, you know. Or if he is telling you, well, what, you can take a look if you want or whatever with it from there, then do it
right. He said they released him 5 minutes after they checked. They went through my phone, and 5 minutes later they concluded I had done nothing wrong and offered him 4 passes to another movie at the theater. There is a lesson to be learned here, though. Don't wear your glass into a movie theater.
No, there's a lesson to be learned for, not for that guy, but for stupid movie theater owners and stupid cops.
No, I disagree, because I think that if you did the same thing, if you held up your phone and did this, or if you had a camcorder, they would go in and arrest you, and they would be within their rights. That's against the law.
He had prescription lenses attached to his glass. Those are his glasses.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he wears his glasses. Yeah. Yes. You know, yes. It's funny, Leo.
I don't get that. It's, and even the recording device, it's like,
the battery lasts 5 minutes.
It's a recording device. It is also your phone. If I'm wearing my smartwatch to the thing, I don't get arrested because it has a recording.
No, but you would if you held it, pointed at it. And the problem with glass is it.
If I hold my watch beeps on me and I go to look at it, now my ping's up or whatever, I could be having glass on because I want to sit in a movie theater. For whatever reason, I want to get a notification on email. I want to get a text message showing up so that I know if I'm having a problem with my babysitter or whatever. Just because it has a recording device doesn't mean that it's recording.
But I think this is the fundamental problem with glass, is that it does have a recording device that is pointed at you, and you don't always know if it's recording. Right. It's the same societal problem of going into a bathroom with glass. And people, if you want to have glass take off, you better be very sensitive to this. Right?
You know, Leo, I felt the same way that you did before last night's episode of All About Android, which I'm going to plug right now, because we had a guest on, Cecilia Abadi, mm-hmm. who was the mm-hmm. woman who was stopped and given a speeding ticket on the road in the San Diego area, but she had glass on while she was driving, and the cop also fined her, or tried to fine her, for wearing glass. And,
she
had to fight it in court, and she won, right, because they couldn't prove that she was watching a video on glass, right, which is what the law prohibits, is that you're looking at the second screen. And, you know, my attitude was like, why would you wear glass while driving, or why would you wear glass to the movie theater? That's just dumb. And, you know, especially driving, right, because when you open the package, one of the first things it says is like, hey, this is not lawful to wear while you drive. Like, don't wear it. I mean, Google basically says don't wear it while you're driving. But, you know, Cecilia
explain, like, she, first of all, she's a CTO of a company that develops glassware. She wears glass all day long. She wakes up in the morning, puts them on, and she's a very dedicated explorer. They're just her glasses. She doesn't think about it anymore. Right. She puts them on and wears them. And it sounds like this is the situation with this guy in the movie theater. And it didn't occur to her to take them off while she was driving. And she wasn't, you know, she wasn't watching Netflix on her glass or whatever. She was just driving. And particularly with driving, it's like navigation is a totally legitimate use case for wearing glass while driving. So, I think that the Explorer program, and I said this on the show last night, the Explorer program is very much this sort of like canary in the coal mine thing. I mean, I think that Google is figuring out, like, where does glass create these issues or these problems? And I think that, you know, movie theater officials and cops on the highway are figuring out what is glass? What is, you know, when they're on, does that mean that they're recording or not? I mean, I think it's just a misunderstanding of the technology. But unfortunately, you have people like Cecilia and this guy in Ohio who have to, you know, be the ones to deal with these sort of legal.
Yeah, I think there's some onus. There's some onus, though, on glass owners to be aware of the sensitive nature of this. And mm-hmm. While I don't care if he's in a movie theater, I do think that glass owners need to put the glass up on their head when they're in a men's room. I mean, I feel like it's kind of a little tone deaf on the part of glass owners to say, hey, man, these are my prescription glasses. What's your problem? You're wearing a recording device in your head. So be aware of that. And some people are going to take umbrage. Some of them will be federal law officials. So it might behoove you just to avoid the problem. Like, if that's his only pair of glasses?
Well, he explained quite a bit, actually, and some other things I was reading on how he has a spare pair, but he's actually been using them as his ordinary pair of glasses.
Well, he needs to kind of wise up.
Well, yeah, but, you know, he'd also said that he's been to the theater before. And
So he got away with it before. That doesn't mean it's not.
Oh, it's not getting away with anything. Leo, hold on. You and I know.
Yes, it is. Wearing a recording device on your head carries a higher responsibility than not wearing a recording device on your head. Will you not agree to that?
I want to repeat this. A recording device that has like 5 minutes of battery
time. No, I don't care. You're wearing a recording device on your head.
Leo, I would agree with you in general. For example, if I go into a restroom and I am actually wearing glass, I will put them on the top of my head when I walk in.
On.
Okay? But I'm going to slide them up. It's no big deal.
Living in the world, Jeff. You got people.
Wait. Let's go to that.
Jeff, at the very least, I don't have to worry. I'm going to go, and then they're going to go, and then, you know. But it's like, big a deal. It's like a polite consideration to do for anybody who might be freaked out.
Let me rant back. If you really think that that every man on earth wants to shoot other men's junk, and the only thing stopping them is they don't have a camera on their head.
No, that's not what we're saying. You have to be where it's societally sensitive. If you go around with a tape recorder like this, people are going to take umbrage, and rightly so.
You're wearing glasses that have technology on it. Jesus, is this week in Ludditism? What happened?
I'm just saying that, I can see Leo's point that you might want to think about a bit more when you're using technology that people are not as familiar with and might be a bit freaked about.
I'm asking you to give credit to people that they're not going to suddenly be bad because they have technology attached to their head.
I understand that. I'm not saying that they are. And I'm not even saying this. I'm not saying this guy did anything wrong. I'm saying
you're saying he should act as if people should assume that he does.
He should be sensitive to the fact that people...
No, I'm saying he should act as if he is virtuous until he does something wrong. You are making him guilty before he's proven guilty.
Like, if I'm wearing glass on occasions and I'm sitting at a table with someone or I'm talking with somebody or interacting with somebody, I may move it to the top of my head just so they don't think I'm going to be suddenly being distracted. It's the same way that if I'm talking to somebody and I look at my phone while I'm talking to them, that can be interpreted as rude.
Jeff, let me ask you this, Jeff. Are there no places you can envision where it would be inappropriate to wear glass?
That's the issue of wearing it. I don't think it's a matter of inappropriateness. No, I don't think.
So there's nowhere you could imagine somebody wearing glass where it would be appropriate to put them away or to take it off.
I think it's appropriate. I think it's appropriate
in every circumstance.
I think it's appropriate to say to someone, "Are you recording?" And it's appropriate to say, "I'm not recording." That's fine.
So if I'm going to a locker room where there are children changing and I'm wearing glass, I should say, "Hey, I have a right to wear this."
I'm not saying it's about right. I'm saying that you are presuming that because someone is using a technology,
no, I'm not.
The use of it is bad. Yeah, you are. And that's an issue because the knee-jerk of the techno-panic crowd is that any use of technology, if it could be done bad, it will be done bad by everyone, and none of us should use it. And I'm objecting to that logic.
Jeff, if I carry an axe around, and I have no intent to chop anybody. This is for wood. If I carry a gun around, I have no intent to shoot anybody. I use this to shoot deer.
Leo, what
are there not things that are just, I mean, maybe legal, but societally, it might be nice if people showed some consideration for other people?
Leo, it ain't far away from you that people drive around with gun racks in the back of their pickups. And if you went up to them and said, I object to you doing that, you shouldn't do that. I want to dash cam on that scene.
No, but I can assure you if they came in here carrying weapons, in fact, you know, you go to Texas, every bar has a sign that says, please don't bring your gun in here.
Yeah.
Is that wrong?
But
are they in some way...
glass is not a gun.
I'm just saying there are behaviors, there are things you can have, whether you intend to do anything wrong or not, that it would just be polite to take them off.
It's the same discussion. No, the guy's glasses. When I get the new glasses and I get prescription lenses on them, I'm not carrying around an extra pair of glasses to change them all the time. That's my glasses.
Well, I think this is going to be an issue going forward,
It was the same argument when cameras went on to cell phones, and it was, oh my God, we can't allow them anywhere near gyms. How many stories have you seen of sickos taking pictures of gyms? We didn't see it because we're not sicko as a society.
I don't go in a locker room like this. Hey, everybody.
No. But if you're wearing it
on your head, it's okay?
Okay, Leo, if they got their phone out, they're texting like this. And the camera could be pointed at your junk, but they're doing this.
Well, I think that's rude. I don't think you should do that. I think that's extraordinarily rude.
When I was at CES, I was in a restroom. And like I said, if I had had glass, when I walk in, I probably would have moved it to the top of my head. Just not because I'm worried that some guy standing next to me thinks I'm taking a picture of him, but just because the entire bathroom area tends to have some degree of privacy expected into it. So I'm like, you know, for whatever reason, I'll put it there. But as I was in this restroom, the urinals in this restroom, sorry to get too graphic, but
last week we talked about this particular hotel, it
was funny that above all the urinals was pictures of women making funny faces and pointing down
looking at your junk,
You know, so I didn't think
that's
it was
in
that
Vegas.
Funny.
Yeah, I've seen but, that, yeah.
But how did you
so I, wait, wait, so wait. I, but I how wanted to share that, that so picture. I took a picture of it with my regular phone. But before I
yes,
did that,
how did you see that picture?
I was really, really careful to make sure
nobody's
no one was
in there.
Around.
If somebody's
no
standing at the urinal, you do not take that picture.
I'm not saying you would take a picture then. And I'm not saying that just because I have a camera with me.
But Jeff, we can't tell with glass. Let me just say, as somebody
yes,
who's.
You can. You can.
I can tell you're taking a picture?
Okay, glass.
No, but you don't have to do okay, glass. You can wink.
No, you can't.
You can go like this and wink.
I think you're playing in a technopanic. And so there was no justification for the treatment of this guy in this theater for wearing his glasses that happened to have a camera attached that he was not using.
No, the right thing for the theater to do was to say, I'm sorry, you can't wear your glass into the theater.
No, the right thing to do was to say, remember, sir, please don't use that camera.
Oh, yeah, that'll work.
Once again, what faith you have in mankind.
I mean, the reality is if he had actually been recording the movie with glass, it would have been a worse recording if he had been had a giant camcorder on his shoulder.
That doesn't stop people from doing it and selling it.
Yeah, but then he also would have had 45 minutes of the movie.
Okay.
I mean, it can't do 2 hours of video.
Okay. So that's like saying, well, you know, I have this camera phone and I'm holding it like this, but you don't have to worry because it only can record, you know, 720p. I mean, I don't think that's really germane.
I think part of the issue, again, this is a precursor of what's going to come. I think we are going to have glasses that have recording devices
in
them because they make a lot of sense. So the issue is not going to go away and it's going to become even more complicated because, if you are having glasses where everything can fit into an ordinary frame, those would be your main glasses. The reason I don't wear glass to when I go to the movie theater, by the way, is because, well, aside from the fact that I don't need them, I like to wear my regular glasses to let me see at distance, right? So I'm, you know, what would I gonna do? I'm not going to double stack them or whatever. I don't need them for most things. But, you know, if I had a pair of glasses, or especially around here, sunglasses, I'm desperate for a pair of sunglasses. I use glass here in Newport as my sunglasses. You know, if I'm going out on the paddleboard or something like that, the sunglasses are great. I can take pictures of stuff and I don't really give it a second thought because, you know, there's a great use case. And so when they become just this ordinary device that you're wearing, it's going to be everywhere. And so then, you know, I don't know what you're going to do at that point. Do you stop everybody who walks into a theater?
Because I'm telling you, this is a rerun. This is a rerun of 1890 and the Kodak camera.
You're not allowed to carry a camcorder into a theater either. I mean, I don't think that that's so. That's an unreasonable restriction. Well, no, admittedly, they overreacted, but what they did was wrong.
I think to what Jeff is saying. When you eventually get to everybody has these recording devices, you get to the point where people start to relax about them and freak and not freak out.
Yes, and also,
you'll probably become pretty clear that a movie recorded from someone's head is not going to be as that great, you know, even as things improve. But
do you think have a legal right to wear glass?
Yes.
Right to wear glass.
I have a legal right to carry around a pencil and paper. When Glenn Greenwald's husband was prevented from writing down the name of the agents interrogating him at the border of the UK, I was offended by that, that you couldn't record something by a
mean. What if I go to a theater with a GoPro strapped to my chest?
Well, no, a restaurant that says, like, shirts and shoes, please, you know, you can't. I mean, that's a different thing. I mean, I think if a bar said, you know, no.
Use the GoPro to see the movie.
That's where the private business has the. So do you have a legal right to go into a private business wearing glass?
No.
Probably not.
The theater has every right to say you may not wear glass in this theater.
Unless you can prove some, maybe there's like a Americans.
The handicap. Yeah, yeah, you know, you're right. ADA says I can wear glass in this theater.
Yeah, I actually have the right to do it. But, you know, in most cases, no. A private business probably could prevent you to do it.
Oh, I know
they can. Do you have the right to be detained because you're wearing something by law enforcement without being arrested?
Well, no, but that's recent law that says you cannot record a movie. And that is a law. I mean, I think they overreacted, but they have the right to do that. They did not act illegally. Otherwise, there would be a lawsuit going on right now. They did not act illegally.
I'm about to ask my Dvorak moment and ask, did nothing happen this week?
We're moving on. LegalZoom.com. It's not a law firm, ladies and gentlemen. It is a sponsor, and I love them. Personalized, affordable, legal protection. If you're starting a business, do not start a business without making it a corporation, whether it's an LLC, a Chapter S, or Chapter C. And you know what? You might have said, I can't afford to do that. Yes, you can. $99 plus the state filing fee for an LLC. And I can tell you, these things work. We did it in 2005. Same exact operating agreement, papers, and everything. Ever since, 9 years later. LegalZoom also will do trademarks. Hey, you got to have a trademark. If you've got a blog or if you're OMG Chad, you've got something that is yours, you don't want somebody copying it, just trademark it. It's easy. LegalZoom is a step-by-step questionnaire. You go through it, you pay the reasonable fee, and boom, you're done. Now, if you feel I need to talk to a lawyer, I'll give you an example. I was trying to decide what state I should incorporate in. Delaware, California. That's when you might want to talk to somebody who has some expertise in the matter. But you don't have to pay the inflated hourly rates of an attorney. You can go to LegalZoom.com. They have pre-negotiated rates with attorneys practicing in your state. You can read the attorney's profile and unedited reviews before you hire the attorney. And the prices are absolutely right. From $23.99 a month for the business legal plan. A month. I can't talk to my attorney for 5 minutes for $23.99. $11.99 a month for personal legal plans. They also have personal services like last will and testament. Here's one you absolutely should do. If you don't have a healthcare power of attorney, make one right now at LegalZoom.com or a living will. You can, if you can't make decisions on your own, this is a really, because you're ill, very important, very important. So go to LegalZoom.com. 90% of customers recommend LegalZooms to friends or family. That means there's some happy, happy LegalZoom users out there. Over 1 million entrepreneurs have started their business on LegalZoom.com. No surprise fees, no hassles, no headaches. LegalZoom's step-by-step process was created, of course, by experts in the fields of law and technology. It works. LegalZoom, not a law firm, but they can connect you with a third-party attorney and provide you with self-help services. From wills to business formation, trademarks, power of attorney. Go to LegalZoom.com, and we invite you to use our discount code TWIG to get $10 off at checkout. That way they know you heard it here. And you save a little money. LegalZoom. LegalZoom.com. Well, just think of it like we'll buy you a cup of coffee if you mention us. LegalZoom.com. Jeff Jarvis at Davos in Switzerland. Gina Trapani in New York at Think Up headquarters. Danny Sullivan, search engine land in Newport Beach. There is actually, I thought this was kind of interesting. It's a Google moonshot. They want to make a contact lens for diabetes patients that would diagnose glucose in your tears.
So cool.
Isn't that neat?
It is.
Really
cool. But here too, I immediately heard, oh no, privacy. Google will know about your diabetes.
Well, that's true.
I've then heard diabetics say, if they can invent this and make me healthier, God bless.
I don't think any diabetic minds, and anybody, you know, if you go to a drugstore and you buy a pinprick kit, then you're on CVS's list. I mean,
well, I heard a great story today at Davos. Mark Benioff was on stage at an event, and he uses a Fitbit religiously. In fact, here at Davos, they're giving us all ups.
Oh, that's neat.
Take part in a health challenge. But Benioff has a Fitbit, and he's tied into a community of people. And he said he got email one day, not long ago, from Michael Dell saying, "Mark, are you okay?" Benioff said, "Well, what do you mean?" And Dell came back and said, "You haven't been exercising for 3 days." And which is kind of a great story. But then Benioff said, you know, it made him realize.
That's a little creepy.
it's in his closed group of friends he trusts, right? He wouldn't let, you know, Leo L. in. He lets Mark, you know, Michael Dell in, and he knows him. But he also said, "I'm the CEO of a public company, and maybe somebody's going to know, you know, something about my health." He said, "Suddenly I realized I got to think about this. I got to be careful."
Interesting.
Yeah, it really was.
So like, so his business, the health of his company to tied to his own health in a way, because
exactly.
He's broadcasting that, or broadcasting. He's publishing it to at least a small number of people
I saw Dell later on the floor, and I said, "You and Benioff should compete to become the most connected executive." And he said, "I'll let Mark have that." Mark also talked about his connected Wi-Fi toothbrush and how he loved that.
What does it do?
What does the toothbrush do?
This idea.
It's his idea.
Maybe this is a prototype. I don't know. Or maybe it's an idea. I couldn't tell the difference. But he really wants it, because he wants it to track him. And he wants it to go directly to his dentist. And his dentist can give him tips. And he wants there to be a button on it that says, you know, help. And it'll connect through his phone to the manufacturer, and he can get help.
Does it do all that now?
I don't think so yet.
You know, somebody. I don't think it does anything. I think it's made up. I don't think there is a Wi-Fi toothbrush. I mean, it's just a matter of time.
It kept track of how long you were brushing, though.
Yeah.
That's what you really wanted to do. There was one.
It was going to be connected. Oh, it's not here yet. Well, here's a story about it. ZDNet. Salesforce's Benioff says your toothbrush will be a marketing tool.
Oh, that's bad. See, Mark, shut up. Because that's just going to make people, that's exactly what's causing people to worry about this stuff. You need toothpaste. You need mouthwash.
Your breath smells.
Apparently, this is a spiel he's been doing.
You're disgusting.
Yeah. See, I think what you really want to be careful about is promoting these as a way to get you better advertising. I think we've established people don't care about better advertising.
What about a toothbrush that can detect your glucose levels through your saliva as well as tell you whether or not you've...
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, and I have to say, if they could find glucose levels in tears, they probably could do blood alcohol level and other things. Here's the Wi-Fi toothbrush, beambrush.com. Thank you, chat room. Beamtoothbrush.com.
Get prizes for brushing your teeth.
Get prizes for brushing your teeth.
This is the thing about quantified self that just... Like
Gina, you have a daughter. You're going to be trying to convince her to brush her teeth pretty soon.
Well, this is the thing, is like you have these apps treating you like your mom, like giving you like rewards for doing your chores.
But wait a minute. Look at this brush, okay? Doesn't that look like an electric toothbrush? It's not. It's a manual toothbrush. All of the size and the charging is dedicated just so they can talk to your phone.
To Wi-Fi.
That's so stupid. Install the free Beam app and connect your brush with a user profile.
So I don't want to start another hour of discussion because I'm tired, but...
Oh, I want this.
The CEO of Palantir is the big data, secretive big data company, is kind of coming out. He was at DLD where I was this last week, and he's at Davos, and he was talking today, and he uses an example of a fascinating data thing that payments to doctors and pharmacies are incredibly indicative of addiction and overdose. And he said, imagine, he said it's not at all implausible in the state of New Hampshire, where there's a huge problem with heroin right now, that, and the governor did in his entire state of the state speech about this, it's Tom Cruise. You could predict that someone is going to overdose with a good probability of being right.
Pre-crime.
Do you intervene?
Well, how do you know?
Because the orders on your basis to your doctor and the pharmacy are highly indicative in ways that I don't know, but right. That everybody nodded in the room and said, yes, this is true.
Wow.
It's data's there.
Wow.
Does who intervene?
The health officials or law enforcement.
Or health officials. I would say not police.
I mean, there's no question if you knew that, you know, in fact, this happens all the time, you had some indication that a child was being abused at home, that you would intervene.
Yes.
Yep.
But that's defending an innocent person. I mean, I don't know.
Let's say it's no police. Let's say that you had a N percent, 85%, pick the number, but a high percentage odds that someone was going to overdose. They had these signs,
right.
These signals that said they were going to overdose. And if you don't intervene,
I think you
what's
can.
Your moral
I don't think you can intervene.
You don't think that someone's doctor is beholden to, I mean, given those indications? I mean, what's the difference between...
Yeah, the doctor should say something. It depends what the intervention is.
Then
the doctor should say something. The doctor shouldn't go to the person's house.
No, there's HIPAA stuff. I was talking to a doctor tonight at a session I was at tonight. This is the Wonders of Davos. And she said that, you know, years ago, if she were in a hospital and she saw someone, she could pick up the chart and read it. Now it's all electronic. It's no. And two people in her hospital were fired because they looked at data for Boston bombing victims.
Well, that's right. That's appropriate. Because that was that was pure prurient. That wasn't for health purposes.
That was in that case. But the same principle applies. What if a doctor says, you know, this person's looking a little yellow to me. I'm just going to walk by. I don't know. Maybe I should take a look at them. If you don't have the right authority, you can't even just look because it's presumed to be evil intent.
What a world.
But I didn't want to get into an hour discussion.
Watch out for your Chrome extensions. It turns out that there is a quick market in a good market in Chrome extensions. Spammers come along, buy a small Chrome extension, you know, has a few hundred thousand users, give them a few bucks, take it over, and then there's no mechanism in Chrome to vet updates to that extension. Google's removed two, Add to Feedly and Tweet This Page. After one was sold, the other was paid to show adware by a simple update. And this seems to be a real flaw in the way Chrome extensions are handled. Google vets the Chrome extension to get it on the marketplace, but after that, anything goes. So there's a
It should check updates.
It should check updates.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
You know how Google found out about this? The Wall Street Journal.
Oh no! Is that true? Oh yeah. No. No.
Well, presumably what happened is that people who had installed this extension went, what the hell? I'm seeing ads, and complained in some way. The Journal posted ran an article about it. Google noted the article and said, oh, we better do something.
Well, the other problem with extensions, and I'm going to talk about this generally because I haven't done a whole lot of extension development. I've dabbled. Is that the permissions for extensions are very broad. Almost every Chrome extension that you install asks you for permission to see all of your browsing activity on every tab.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed this when you install it. It freaks me out every time, but most extensions can't work without those permissions because they do certain things on certain pages, and so they have to be able to. So you're sort of trusting them to only do what they need to do on the pages that they apply to. But those are overly broad permissions allow for this kind of thing to happen, for someone to buy the extension or take it over with malware or whatever. So I think there's two issues. There's like there's the permissions model, which I think that Google could do better with, a la Android's permission model, which also could use a little improvement, but is definitely better than what they have for Chrome. But also the update vetting process. I mean, all they have to do is parse that code, that source code on every update and check for...
It'd be pretty easy to see, wouldn't it?
Check for URLs and see and run it against their malware database, you know, their ad or malware database and flag it.
So the way it happened, Amit Agrawal, who created AdDefeedly, described on his website how he had sold the extension to an unknown buyer for a small sum. He said the new owner added code that injected of invasive advertising on users. Meanwhile, Ars Technica reported the other extension, Google removed, tweet this page also had been purchased and altered to insert ads. And then this is the Wall Street Journal. Google removed the two extensions after being contacted by the Wall Street Journal. maybe I'm assuming causation. Maybe Google was already planning to do that. I don't know.
It's a big business. I had a very popular Firefox extension back in the day, years ago. But I got tons of of inquiries
Did
about
you?
Partnerships and about ad revenue partnerships, and I always turned them down. But it was interesting. And now I don't hear about it. It was Firefox. It was a while ago. But now you
know why they were contacting you.
Yeah,
because basically you've got a Trojan horse in the user's computer that's been given all these permissions.
Hey, you can rewrite links on any website to wherever you want them to go. Yeah.
Terrible. This is really bad because extensions to the browser. I mean, the browser is really the vector for bad guys getting into your computer. And extensions have all these permissions and they're sitting right there. I think we're going to have to really, I think Google needs to really look at how extensions are vetted. Yahoo, you probably knew this as the publisher of searchengineland.com. Yahoo tops the most traffic website list for desktops in the U.S., beating Google, Microsoft, and Facebook, according to ComScore.
Only old farts still have desktops.
That's non-mobile.
They've been on top for months now. So, you know, I mean, that was like several months ago when they finally flipped up over to the top.
Right.
So I think the reason you're hearing so much about desktop is because they're having to really qualify that this is desktop. When it was first that they were up, nobody kind of really paid much attention to that. So that seemed to be the twist that we're stressing even more that that's what's happening on desktop.
In December, Yahoo had more than 195 million uniques. That's a good number.
The hard thing is we don't know why. Because when they first shot up, I did a whole thing on this. I did charts and everything, and I showed that how
that was a great post.
After
that
Marissa
was a great
came
post,
in, they went and they did this spike. I think it was like Yahoo's traffic is up, but no one knows why. It was something like that.
I remember that.
I'll try to find it later. But he had this little spike, and then a big spike, and then another big spike, and spikes like that are unusual / suspicious. They don't just happen overnight. Sometimes they happen because like a publisher suddenly decides that they're going to do slideshows on every page, right?
And yeah.
So the same page is now counting twice. So I went back to Yahoo when all this first came out. I said, well, what'd you do? What's the secret sauce? And it's like, well, we've just done a good thing all over all Yahoo. And it's really great. So, you know, and then what's also interesting was, you know, one of our assumptions was, well, maybe this was because they bought Tumblr, but no.
They weren't counting Tumblr.
They would be even higher
than
they are now if Tumblr were wrapped up into it. But the last time I looked at the stats, they're still not wrapping up Tumblr into Yahoo's overall properties, which is odd.
I think you were on when we talked about this, actually. You talked about this on the show, yeah.
But yeah, they're there. So Yahoo, woohoo.
Woohoo. Do you think they think it's legit?
I don't know. I don't know. I really don't. I mean, I don't like spikes like that without explanations.
Right.
I think Yahoo knows why they would spike up on that, and they should explain it.
They have the details.
When they don't explain it, and there was another thing. There was a whole series of articles recently that were going out about, I can't remember who had it, but it was like, Yahoo's in trouble. Tumblr's not growing. And then there was like a chart, and he's going on with Tumblr, and then Yahoo's like, well, you know, we don't, we only trust numbers that you get from ComScore, but then they were like citing the ComScore numbers, and then Yahoo's all like quiet, and so, you know.
Well, also, it's hard to measure mobile. I don't know if they were measuring mobile for those numbers, and on and on and on. There was something I wanted to talk about, and I forgot what it was.
There wasn't a whole lot of news this week relative to most shows, I will say.
No, that's why we went on forever about that glass story.
Well, I also think that there was a lot of passionate feelings about that.
Yes, there were.
There were a few feelings, apparently. Little did I know. Little did I know.
One of my thrills of Davos was getting to sit across from Tony Fidel of
Nest. Oh, was he there? Oh, yeah. What did he say?
Yeah, he's here. Oh, he's just a really charming, charming, nice guy. I asked him about whether he was in the Google Hotel, and he said, "Oh no, it's not closed yet. We can't do any of that stuff." Yeah. But really fascinating to hear him talk about Nest and about the Protect thing and how they're going to spread bit by bit, and why it made sense to be bought by Google. Can you share that? I don't think anything was secretive about it. I think that you know you go for more money, and then you've got to meet this really high barrier. And he talked in Munich about how he talked to a lot of companies over time. It just took a long time, but when he sat down with Larry Page, it was just obviously kismet. He said, "I go into meetings and I think I'm going to teach somebody something to get somewhere in this meeting."
You know how you spell kismet? $3.2 billion.
Amen. Well, he worked the hell out of it.
Kismet!
He also said he learned a lot out of Larry.
$3.2 billion. Dollars.
Yeah, but what he told the employees is, it's a line you hear all the time in these purchases. What they really did was invest in Nest.
Yes,
but it's true. They have the resources. They're going to be able to do amazing things. I went up to him afterwards because he talked about, and this is one of the stories in the rundown, he has said, we're not going to change our privacy policy. But if we do, we'll let you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, listen, I want Wave to tell Nest on my way home, oh, he's in traffic. Wait an hour before you put the heat up. I want those connections. And he said,
we're not going to ever change our privacy policies, which is a stupid thing to say and put them in line with. Right. Well, no, they said we weren't going to change. We're not going to share data. We're not going to. I mean, I recall it as being pretty clear the first day was we aren't changing anything. We're not sharing our data, which is a stupid thing to say because you are not the CEO, founder, whatever of your company forever.
Right.
And Google has made similar promises to how they will never do anything and they do 180-degree turns. Then the next day is, well, if we make some changes, we'd give you lots of notice. So, yeah, they're going to make changes. They're going to make changes that will upset some people. They probably will share stuff with it. There'll be some benefits to doing it. But it always makes you laugh when you have a founder act like they've sold their company, but the company is never going to change.
Yeah.
Because it changes.
You don't have any choice.
The company, and it's no longer your company.
It's called, I gave you $3.2 billion. Now shut up and go away.
Yeah.
That's okay. I would take the money and run.
I installed the Nest stuff, by the way. I didn't have them, so I ordered the thermostat, which I thought
think?
Was a waste. Well, I thought it was a waste. Like, for me, I don't get it, right? Because I'm in Southern California.
You never leave the house.
Well, I don't leave the house, and we're right on the coast, so it's not hot and it's not cold, and it's like 10 times a year I turn on to maybe get a little bit more heat. And then it was like, okay, it's kind of cool that I thought I was going to be constantly trying to adjust stuff. And no, I could see why people would want it, and it was pretty smart, and it was cool to flip the fan on when I was away just to freak the kids out. The smoke detector, though, I'm like, wow, that's an expensive smoke detector.
Yeah.
And when you get the instructions, it's like, and we really recommend smoke detectors be placed inside and outside every room in the house. And it's like,
at $250
each. $2,000 to wire up my house with smoke detectors.
That may be why I didn't really get much out of the Nest, because I live in California. Maybe it makes more sense if you live in the frigid tundra.
Oh, rub it again, will you? Rub it again.
Yeah.
It was turning on the heat at random times. It was too smart for its own good. And frankly, Jeff, I don't, if I'm on the way home and I have to get home and the house is cold and I have to turn on the heat, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, see, but here's what I want.
You're in California.
That's true.
Yeah. Yes.
It's 18 degrees here.
But on the other hand, if you're in New England or New York, you don't let the house get down to 52 degrees. You're always
Leo, right. Yeah. I'll give you another example. We have the heated floor in the bathroom because it's cold where we live.
Yeah.
I want my alarm to be tied to the floor so that the floor goes on 15 minutes before the alarm goes off.
This is such a first world problem.
Okay. Now that's, yes.
You could wear slippers, Jeff.
Yeah,
wait a minute. And I say that as a guy who has a toilet seat that heats up. I know. Well, no, I understand. I'm not
eating toilet seats. Those are awesome when I've had them in the hotel.
No, I'm not. I am not immune to
the
pleasures.
I'm getting Davos backlash tonight. I'm among the 1%.
No,
you're treating
no,
me
no.
Like
I'm with you. I'm saying I have a toilet seat that washes my butt. However, it's hard to justify a $250 smoke alarm.
Oh, I'm not arguing with that. I'm saying a software connection that shouldn't cost anything.
Yeah, I mean, eventually all this stuff, and maybe it'll just be kind of, it's just the way it is. Everything's talking to everything else, and it's all, I just see all sorts of difficulty in, you know, I mean, this is a long, we're a little ways off. It's $129 for the smoke detector. Okay, so it's only four times more expensive than a First Alert.
No, I think a First Alert runs
$12.
I just bought one.
They're cheap.
No.
Oh,
well,
you're
well,
getting
not the wired one. It was $45.
Well, the wired ones are more expensive. You're right.
Yeah. And the CO2 one, I think, is $75 or $80.
Right. All right. So it's not so far off. Yeah. I can't remember what it was I wanted to talk about.
Oh, here's one thing he said last night that I loved. They auditioned huge numbers of people to be the voice of the Nest alarm. Because the Nest alarm will say,
I'll do it.
It'll stop to you, right?
I'll do it. And, get out of the house. It's burning
right. well,
down.
And he also said that they picked a woman's voice because children of a certain age, you know, listen to mothers' voices.
Yes. They do that for pilots. So the heads up voice when you're blacking out in a plane is always a female. Yeah, because pilots listen to female voices. But that's been known for years.
I didn't know that.
Pull up. It's always a female voice.
I hate it when they're testing that.
Yeah. Yeah, you can hear it sometimes when you're on the plane. It's very depressing.
Yeah.
Pull up. No.
I just confessed my first world problem that I sit in business class to hear it.
Yes.
I just need a Nest light switch that when the kids leave the room goes, hey,
turn off
the light.
Hey, I'm not made of money.
I would call it dad switch.
Yeah. I'm not made of money. Turn off the lights.
Although
doesn't grow on trees.
We had to have one room redone, and then they put in these automatic switches that are apparently not very expensive. And I was like, but you've just made me redundant.
No, by the way, men
I have
and
no need to exist.
The chat room's giving me a hard time. Not just men listen to female voices. Women listen to female voices, too. It works for both genders. Humans listen to female voices.
Oh, yes, but I can add something to this. I remember reading an article about BMW or somebody in Germany discovering that they couldn't use a woman's voice for the auto navigation in the car.
That was Italy.
Men, because they did not like a woman telling them what to do.
Oh,
that
my
was,
God.
As I remember.
Oh, my
that
God.
In that case, they had to go to
Italy.
Voice, and in particular, with a man using a co-pilot style intonation, because they reacted better if it was more like the co-pilot with them.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
It's not okay. Surprising. The co-pilot's telling us to turn. But if my wife is telling me to turn, I am not going to turn.
I mean, I've heard that children, particularly babies, respond to higher. I mean, this is why babies love Elmo, right? Because the voice is just so high.
Right.
But I didn't know that.
Programmed that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So you can get wood now in your Moto X. They got four kinds, and it's cheap. It's $25 to add a wooden back. They started with a bamboo, but as of yesterday, ebony. I know Mike Elgin just ordered his ebony, teak, and walnut. God, that's gorgeous.
So are you doing it, Leo?
I already have a Moto X, but I actually am thinking of buying a new Moto X just so I can have walnut. Doesn't that look
beautiful?
Oh,
so
beautiful?
You can't do just the back. Right? You
no,
can't
no, you have to buy a whole new Moto X. But look at the price, by the way. When I bought the Moto X, it wasn't $75. They've really dropped the price. That's, of course, with subsidy. Wow. But still, they've really dropped the price on this.
Well, that's interesting. You're right, Leo. I'll bet even with the wood, it's cheaper than the retail that you pay.
Absolutely it is.
Yeah, right. Interesting.
Sigh. No, off contract, it's now $399. That's almost half what I paid. Trade in your old phone and get a credit. I wonder if they take a Moto X as the old phone. I really want walnut. It's so beautiful. The only reason I wouldn't do that is I just have a strong suspicion there must be a next generation coming any minute now. Any minute now.
Yeah, with the price drops.
Yep. Let us take a break. When we come back, tips, tools, numbers. Danny, if you want to throw in a pick of the week, we'd love it.
Oh, okay.
You're watching This Week in Google with Danny Sullivan of Search Engine Land.
Although I'm probably going to have to jump off.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, we kept you long. You want to leave? You can. Danny Sullivan, thank you.
My pick of the week, real quick, is ThinkUp. It's awesome.
It is awesome.
Thank you.
It is awesome.
I look forward to Twitter buying it because that's what they should just do.
Danny, thank you for keeping us, letting us keep you a little longer. I appreciate it.
I was going, we'll probably be done by 3. I'm like, no, I really got to go now.
Oh, I had no idea. I wasn't paying attention. Thank you, Danny Sullivan. Marketing Watch and Search Engine Land.
You guys take care.
Take care.
Thanks, Danny.
Bye-bye, Danny. Great guy. Don't we love Danny Sullivan?
We do indeed.
Yeah, you just did me
especially
a solid.
He's ranting.
he's a good ranter. But, you know, he's been kind of the conscience of the search industry, particularly Google, for ages.
Yeah.
That's what we need. Our show today brought to you by 99designs.com. This is a great place to go. In fact, I was just looking at our T-shirt designs. Hoodie designs. We're going to do a hoodie. And I was rating. It was so great. So what we did is we went and we created a contest on 99 Designs. There are currently 2,280 open contests. And we said we want a design for our hoodies. And we got, I can't remember, I looked at 3 pages of designs. I went and picked my top 5. And then we're going to have a little vote off and so forth. It's so much fun. Thank you, everybody who submitted designs. I think this is a really great way to bring people who need design help together with some of the best designers in the world. There are now over 270,000 designers at 99designs.com. And they're waiting to hear from you. Everything from logo design to web design, landing page, mobile app. Yeah, they'll do app design. They'll do a business card. Even a car wrap. Prices start as low as $199. You tell 99 Designs what you need. Dozens of designers from the community will submit designs created just for you. You can, you know, see the ideas roll in, give them your feedback, help refine the designs, and select and pay for your favorite. You need new collateral, marketing collateral? 99 Designs, an email template, banner ad, infographic. And we're going to give you a little extra special something here. If you go to 99designs.com/twig, you'll get a $99 Power Pack of services absolutely free. Power Pack gives you more designer time and attention. They'll bold, highlight, and feature your design project. In the 99 Designs marketplace, you will get, as a result, more than twice as many designs. 99designs.com/twig. And we'll show you our T-shirt designs soon, I think. Because I picked them last night. Not T-shirt. What did I say? Hoodie.
Hoodie. Hoodie. That's exciting.
Wow. Where was that?
Sorry. That was me. There's sirens going by. I'm trying to mute.
I forgot Manhattan. I forgot.
Yeah,
New York.
Constant sirens.
Yeah. It kind of makes you feel like it's vital. You're living somewhere where people are living and dying even as we speak.
Yeah, it feels like you run over the minute you step outside the office.
Mostly dying. Mostly. All right, let's start you off here with a tip of the week, Gina.
Google Drive added a cool new feature, which I really like. It's an activity stream to the upper right-hand side of your drive. So I really like this. I spend a lot of time in Google Drive. My business partner and I do a lot of our business documents in Drive. And so they've added it's a little I icon. I don't know what I stands for. Info? I'm not sure. At the top right corner, and this is just rolling out now over the past week. So I saw it in my Google Apps account, but not my vanilla Gmail account. So you might have to wait for it to see this, but you click on it and it's an activity stream of updates to your Google Drive documents. So what document and who updated it last? Really, really handy if you share particularly if you share documents with other people a lot, kind of to see what's going on and what's happening. So new Google Drive activity stream.
I figure the I is info. Yeah.
Yeah. It's gotta be info.
That's
right?
The universal logo.
Universal. Yeah. There's a circle in the I.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jeff's got quite the number of the week this week.
Yeah, my first number is actually 12. It's midnight here, so I went and found the last number I could.
God.
So I want to preface this by saying it's utter BS. I don't believe it, but what the heck? It's just like BuzzFeed. I'm going to give it to you anyway. Some Princeton researchers say that Facebook will lose 80% of its users by 2017. Well, how do they say that? Well, they compare Facebook in terms of Google searches to a virus.
Oh, wow.
Now, how you could justify this, I do not know. But they say that it's growing at the rate of the virus, thus it will die at the rate of a virus. It's BS, but it's a number. And it's midnight, so I wanted a number.
I think it's a good number, and I don't think it's BS. I think they're exactly right. And I think they even got it. I think it's going to happen sooner than that.
Like bubonic plague, Facebook will eventually die out. I love that.
No, I think you could call it. I think Facebook's dead right now.
I'm feeling a case of Zuckitis. Oh.
I don't know. I find myself really not using it as much as I did. There's a lot of Upworthy crap.
Yeah, they definitely changed the news algorithm.
I don't think I'm alone. I think even people who use it, and the people who use it because that's how, that like Lisa, that's how you stay in touch with family and friends. But they don't like it.
Right, they do it because that's where the people are. That's
how
where...
long can something survive that people use but don't like?
Mm-hmm.
All it takes is somebody to come along and do a better job, and it's over. Although there is that, there's the network effect, I understand, but it just...
There's the network effect, yeah. I mean, someone can make a social network that's way better than Facebook, but the people aren't there.
Yeah.
But we've seen how fast the people can move.
No, that's true.
And I don't think people under 25 use Facebook at all, do they? No. Do you, Chad, use it?
I think people under 25 do all have accounts. I don't think
My daughter does. It's how she stays in touch with people. So she graduated from high school a couple of years ago, so... It's a diaspora. Everybody she knows went somewhere, and it's a really good way to stay in touch with
everyone. Nowadays, sees it as a tool.
Yeah,
it's a utility to make parties happen and to share your photos. It's not it's not what it used to be, which was a place to go and kill 30 hours while you looked at everyone's pages and streams.
So sick of it.
Yeah.
So speaking of viri. We did this last year. We do it every year. The Google Flu Trends charts up, google.org/flutrends. This is a bad one this year, H1N1. It's everywhere. Look at the heat map. You see that red? That's where the redder it is, the more flu activity. And there's only a few places. Like if you want to avoid the flu, go to North Dakota, Utah, not New Mexico, Indiana, or Maine. The rest of us, we're toast. Google does this with the help from the CDC. It's actually really an interesting thing they do every year. Google Flu Trends, and you can just see each year the activity spikes. But you see, this is a bad one. See how that peak is higher than anything in the last 10 years.
Oh yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, bad one this year.
Yeah, I've become a Purell maniac now that I work in an office with other people.
Yeah, that's the thing you don't want to do. Never go around other people, ever. I got my shot last Thursday. So, they say it takes 2 weeks for it to get to full strength. So, I have a little countdown on my desk. Okay, only 4 more days or whatever, yeah.
Leo's in quarantine.
Don't talk to anybody. Anyway, that's always fun. It's google.org/flutrends if you want to follow the flu.
Nice.
And then there was another, I don't take credit for this. This came from Alex Lindsay. Google Maps Engine now is this new or not? Has a nice interface. So mapsengine.google.com. If you have data, there's a free and there's a paid version that you can use that data. It'll import comma separated values, CSVs, and other formats, and you can import the data. He showed me, he did a survey. You can use Google Apps to do a survey, right? Using, I think it's a spreadsheet. And then automatically imported the data into the map and was able to, really do some neat stuff.
Hmm.
Have you seen this before? He wasn't sure when did this start, and I didn't know either. It's mapsengine.google.com. They've always had an API, but it's always been a little challenging.
They've had a couple of things like this, but I don't think I've seen this specifically. Interesting.
Yeah, I think this is neat. It makes me want to play with it, see what we can do.
Yeah.
Gina Trapani, you've got the data. You've got it all at thinkup.com. Is it too? Now, when are you going to let people sign up?
Next couple of weeks. We're working on that right now. we're just kind of looking at our, you know, crowdfunding backers data and seeing
how's it going. Is the servers survive?
Servers are doing great. Everything's chugging along. Response has been pretty good. We're fixing bugs left and right. We're working on opening up signups, and we're just looking to see, you know, what are the insights that are useful. You know, what are people sharing? What aren't? That kind of thing. And
so
just
can I control what insights I get, or is it just whatever you've got?
It's whatever we have right now, but we would like to add more controls to say, hey, don't show me, you know, something like this again, or show me more of this, that kind of thing. Yeah.
By the way, one of the great ones, Leo Laporte mentioned ThinkUp once last week.
Yeah, it probably shouldn't surface one that where you just mentioned once.
I'll mention it more. I'll talk about it more. I'm loving it. I'm really loving it. All the stats and so forth. It's really fun.
Thank you. It's early days, but we want to get something out that was working to our backers and give them kind of first dibs to kind of hear feedback, and then we'll open up to the public. But hopefully that's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, by February.
That's not mine, by the way. That's Chad's. OMG, Chad's tweets contain the word I, me, my, mine, or myself 11 times in the last week.
That's that one always gets a reaction.
That's the but enough about me stat. By the way, my number one tweet of the week, according to your graph here, was it should be clear to everyone by now that Twit Live is an online soap opera or something like that. Reality show. I think reality show. 32 retweets and 77 favorites. That's kind of fun to know that stuff. Really nice. Handy. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, soon it'll be open to the public, but right now you can go to jeffjarvis.thinkup.com. It's public, right? People can see the stats.
Yep. Yeah.
Or Leo Laporte. thinkup.com. Yep. Chad, what's yours? OMG Chad?
Correct.
thinkup.com. Gina Trapani at thinkup.com.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah. I just mentioned thinkup.com like 18 times. I should get it.
I know. You did. You did. I know.
I didn't do it in social media, see? Gina's also a blogger, although I bet she's not doing a lot of blogging right now, at smarterware.org. And is a new resident of Brooklyn, just in time for the worst winter storm in years.
Co-host of All About Android on Tuesday nights.
Oh, how could I forget? Every Tuesday, catch her, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern.
I do need to work on my lighting here. I'll
work
that out.
It's getting dark.
It won't be as dark. Yeah, the problem is the sun goes down during the course of the show. Right. So I start out bright, and then it gets kind of dark in here.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I'll work on that.
Jeff Jarvis still hates Verizon at buzzmachine.com. He's up late. Thank you for staying up late for us, Jeff. We really appreciate
pleasure.
It.
Pleasure.
And enjoy your time. I can't wait to hear more stories from Davos next week.
You will. I'll see Eric Schmidt at the site of the fire on Thursday. So.
Are you going to will you blog a little bit about what's going on there?
I haven't yet. If something of note happens, there's not nothing seems bloggable yet. I used to blog, but not now.
All right. And when do you come back to the polar vortex?
Sunday.
Oh, you're going to be there a while. All right.
Yep.
Have a great time. Thank you all for joining us. We do This Week in Google, 1 p.m. Pacific. That's 4 p.m. Eastern time, 2100 UTC on twit.tv I wanted to say Thursday, but this is Wednesday. My week is still – I'm still not used to this new schedule. Every Wednesday. But you can always see on-demand versions after the fact. Audio and video made available at twit.tv/twig. On YouTube at youtube.com/
This week in Google, youtube.com/twig.
Twig, okay. youtube.com/twig. And, of course, you can subscribe in your favorite netcast catcher. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Twig.